Hello and welcome to the Spooktator podcast. This is the podcast which examines the stranger elements of life, society, international culture and the media. My name is Hayley Stevens and my co-hosts are Charlie Revel-Smith and Paul Gannon.
Hello everyone.
Hello.
Hello guys. So what have you been up to lately?
I'm in America. I'm in Chicago at the moment, staying for a sort of an extended period. I've been working on a book while I'm out here, doing the Weird Bristol book at an accelerated pace because the release schedule has been fighting me somewhat. So I'm having to race to get it done in time for Christmas, but it'll be done and it'll be good as well.
Can you tell us what the release date is?
It is, I believe, November 17th, but I will I will check. Yes. So it will be out in paperback on, so yeah, you can understand why that I'm racing the clock with it, because I've never worked, you know, had such a short window, but I'm enjoying it. It's going well.
Good.
I've just moved from Cambridge to London, so I'm settling in. I've been ill all this week. Cheap Show turns 100 soon, so there's live shows next week. So it's all stressing me out. I'm basically ill.
Right. Yeah, I'm a little bit kind of like coughy, sniffly. I think as the seasons change, I think it kind of, we all kind of go down with something or another, don't we?
I'm just in that, yeah, that general sort of headspace of just like summer is over and now we have got so long of just cold, wet, grey days for until at least late February, and I just need a, yeah.
I love winter and autumn. I've recently taken up the habit of going for a walk in the morning at 6 o'clock before I go into work. Because the area I live in, there are some really amazing places you can go walking. And so I'm out before the sun rises and there's hardly anyone around and it's just quiet. And it's really lovely, even though it's cold and sometimes misty and sometimes rainy. It's actually just, I find it really nice.
See, a nice like crisp, sunny, cold winter day can be wonderful. But it's the greyness that gets me down. Just
the nothingness.
Weeks and weeks and weeks of just cloud cover. It's just like, oh, sick of this.
Well, on that cheery note.
You left Cambridge, Paul, and I went to Cambridge because recently I delivered a talk for Cambridge Skeptics in the blah.
Where is that? Is that some weird kind of village?
Let me start that again. I recently delivered a talk for Cambridge Skeptics in the Pub, which is really fun. It's the first full-length talk I've done in probably over a year, I think. And yeah, I always like to keep what I'm talking about updated with like the latest claims and things that are happening in the world of paranormal research. And so I got to talk a little bit about Slender Man and all those sightings and so on. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, was it a good, well-received, had a lot of fun?
Yeah, they're a really lovely group. There was one man in the audience who was a bit aggressive in his questioning, cornered me. So the way that Skeptics in the Pub works is you do your talk then for about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour, then you have a break, and then you go back for a Q&A. And in the break, I always like to go to the loo, get a drink, maybe have something to eat, that kind of thing, if I have time. And I didn't get to do any of that because this guy was just like, so why do you do what you do? Who are you doing it for? What's the point? And I was like, have you actually just like sat through my hour lecture and just not taken anything in whatsoever? But it was really well handled by the organisers. They kind of got me out of that situation, and then they controlled the Q&A really well because he tried to take over that as well, but they were on it, which is really cool.
Good.
Yeah, very good.
Talking of audiences, I also went to see Derek Acora on tour. And I won't say much about that other than you can read my honest review of that on my blog at hayleyisaghost.co.uk. In this episode, we're going to talk about a haunted road accident black spot, the Ogopogo Lake Monster, the Loch Ness Monster, and more. So without further ado, let's get into it. Do you guys remember that we had an email from Paulo, who I wasn't sure was called Paulo or Paolo?
Yes.
He wrote into us asking for our opinion on a piece of footage from an episode of Most Haunted in which it was claimed that a ghost had been caught on camera. Well, he reached out again to let us know we had in mind the completely wrong episode, so we went on a nice long ramble about something he didn't even want to hear about. So, sorry, but one thing he didn't point out in the email was whether his name was Paulo or Paolo, so if I'm still pronouncing it incorrectly, I'm sorry. You had a chance to correct me, though, so I'm not that
choosing to remain a mystery.
So, Paulo sent a link in to the footage in question, which we're going to include in the notes page for this episode at www.spooktator.co.uk. And it's a clip that comes from Season 11, Episode 3 of Most Haunted, which was filmed at the Exeter Old Courts. And if you've got the episode available to you somehow, it happens at around the 37 minutes mark. There is a link to it online, which I'll include. You guys have watched this. What's your take?
I literally don't think it's anything special other than the light catching an angle when the camera moves that it wouldn't have caught in any other angle. I don't think it's an evil will-o'-the-wisp. I was actually a bit disappointed, to be honest.
As well, it's the old pareidolia thing. You look for a face in the first, you draw three dots on a page and we will turn that in our heads into a mouth and two eyes. It's just, abstract form, the first thing we try and turn it into is a face. And I think that, like Paul said, it was just an unusual bit of lighting going on in the scene. That's what at least I would put it down to.
And also, my point of view of this is that it took someone years to find it and like proposed that it was a clever intentional effect. And I was like, it's not a very clever intentional effect, though, is it? If that's the case, because I could have watched that for hours and not have recognized it until I had to watch the video that pointed it out frame by frame with a little red circle.
I think the original question posed to us when we were first contacted about this was whether or not it was an overlay or some kind of manipulation. But yeah, having watched it, I don't think so. I agree with you guys that it's a sort of an illusion. I wonder if it could be an illusion that's caused by something in the hand of the person who's further forward in the video, to kind of understand that you'll need to watch the video. So I wondered perhaps if he had something like a thermometer or an EMF meter or a camera in his hand. People in the comments are arguing that Most Haunted don't use those pieces of equipment, so he wouldn't have had that in his hand. But I still say that could be possible. But either way, whether it's something in his hand or something he's wearing, I don't know. It's definitely just the movement of the camera and the movement of the people has created this kind of weird little kind of blob thing. But I don't think it's anything of significance.
Shame. I was really hoping Most Haunted have proven that ghosts do exist.
Years ago.
And I guess I'll have to wait. Yeah, I have to wait again for the new series to start.
I'm sure
to see
this
if, maybe
is
this
be
year.
The one.
Maybe this year they've caught something. I think so.
I think this is the one we've all been waiting for. I can't wait. We're going to be eating our skeptical words.
It is October, and therefore it is the time in which the tabloid press goes crazy for ghost stories. So we have been spoilt for choice this episode, or at least I have, looking for something to cover. And this episode, I'm talking about something that is actually quite serious, but it's reported in the most asinine way imaginable. I'm taking this story from that bastion of flawless reportage, which is The Express, and their recent article on a spate of car accidents on the M6 motorway. It's a ghost, by the way. If you can't wait to hear what their explanation for this is, it's ghosts. Anyway, this story involves a stretch of the M6 motorway near Cheshire, which has become known as an accident black spot, meaning that an above average number of car crashes happen in this area. Now, accident black spots are a real thing, and their causes... there's multiple things, but it can be blind bends, there can be hills obscuring the distance, or even like really subtle things such as being situated a long distance between service stations so that people might not have had a rest or a coffee. And so you will find accident black spots can be at places where people just aren't as alert as they ordinarily would be at other times. A friend of mine was actually part of an investigation into a car pile up on what was an accident black spot on the M4 a few years ago. And it occurred on Guy Fawkes Night. And the initial worry was that it may have been caused by a nearby fireworks display.
I remember
yes,
that.
Yes, yes. It proved actually not to be the cause. And it ended up being attributed to several different factors. The biggest of all being that this black spot was in sort of like a ditch in the road where it crossed a small river, which was prone to creating mist at night. And so that seems to be what mainly was the cause of it. So the accident black spot on the M6 has supposedly been responsible for dozens of accidents over the past few years. But there's been a steep increase since roadworks began, which was a few months back. Now, what first alerted my attention in this article is when it describes the black spot itself, and that it is the stretch of the motorway between junction 17 and 19 of the roadway. Now, this is a stretch that's almost 20 miles long, which actually doesn't sound like the traditional definition of an accident black spot. In fact, you can kind of stretch if you stretch the definition enough, I'm sure you could place even more accidents in this area and still be claiming that this is an accident, a peak place for it to be happen. Now, Mike Brooker, who was interviewed for the Express article, although we never really get a reason as to why, other than he's supposedly a psychic, he's dubbed the area Cheshire's Bermuda Triangle, which actually seems very apt because the Bermuda Triangle is an incredibly loose term that can define any kind of sized area of the ocean that you want to. And people do tend to extend it to cover pretty much the entire western section of the North Atlantic to make the statistics of disappearances seem even more impressive. So what's his theory? Well, as I said, it is ghosts, more particularly the ghosts of Roman soldiers who've had their burial grounds disturbed by recent roadworks. Now, the M6 has had quite a history of supposed ghost sightings. If you go onto YouTube, there are dozens and dozens of videos and pictures of supposed sightings, which people have taken usually with dash cams and things like that. The Phantom Hitchhiker, of course, is the most commonly reported, it seems to be the general standard ghost of all roadways in the country. So as I said, YouTube have got quite a collection of supposed sightings dating back to at least 2011. But there were stories of supposedly mysterious things happening along the motorway since long before then. I've had a look at quite a few of these videos and I have to say I haven't been convinced by any of them. They look more like the reflections of lights on the windows or even just actual human hitchhikers, which you don't tend to see that often anymore, but you probably see them more often than ghosts. I don't know if any of you saw any of the videos. I know that there was one in an article that Hayley shared.
Yeah, I saw the one where there seemed to be like a sort of figure at the side of the road, which to me just looked like a person.
Yes, that's what I thought as well. Or possibly even the quality is so poor, it can actually even be something like a deer that you could see at the edge of the road, which isn't wildly uncommon to see deer along the edge of the motorway. Mostly they're wise enough to steer clear of the actual road, but occasionally you will see one at the edge of the edge of the road. So it is possible that face on it could look like a doe. That was kind of what my initial thought of that was, or just a human at the end at the edge of the motorway. It certainly seems more likely. Now the area is particularly known for its Roman history, but I always find it a bit strange how nowadays it's in these kind of articles, it's not good enough to just say, I think it might be a ghost. You have to be specific. You need to say, it is this ghost. It is this ghost of this famous person. Kind of celebrity ghosts are the best ones to come across. They seem to be especially valuable to the tabloids. But in lieu of that, they've decided that because of the area, it's, you know, it's safe to say that some random Roman centurions will have to do. So I kind of think that this article was really trying to make something out of, well, put a supernatural spin on something which is actually really quite serious and should be investigated properly, which I'm sure that it is. I'm sure roadworks are helping to contribute to the recent upswing of accidents that have happened there. But as I said, accident black spots are a real thing, and it's especially wise for drivers to be just a little bit extra vigilant around roadworks. But unfortunately, there might just be an inevitable part of road travel, and their causes don't need to call upon the supernatural for an explanation. So I suggest that we have less articles desperately trying to put a ghost angle on a serious issue, and a little bit more about just be careful on the roads out there. It can be dangerous. So that is the M6 ghost.
I think it is interesting the way as well in which sort of the types of ghosts that people see has changed over the years. So I think it's in what book is it?
Is it the Ladybird Book of Ghosts? Because I've got that.
That one too. But I think it's the book by Owen Davies, which is called The Haunted, which is basically like this book is just so awesome. I've got so many sticky notes on all the different pages, and there are lines drawn under sentences. This is like the go-to book for ghosts. And I think it's in here that he basically points out how traditionally you would have had crossroads ghosts. And now you kind of move on to phantom hitchhikers and
women in white, women in red, all of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
There is your headless
horseman. Floating
horsemen.
Hands.
Yep.
Ooh.
There are lots of ghost stories that are associated with roads, which are associated with travel and mm-hmm. going from one place to another.
I was going
to
say, have there ever been ghost stories about planes? I mean, like ghosts on planes, like jumbo jets?
Oh, yes,
jets
there
or...
was the flight. They made a film of it. I remember reading the book, like a non-fiction book called The Ghost of Flight 401, possibly.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like Passenger 57 or something.
No, I think it was like a made-for-TV movie, but it had... supposedly a plane had been involved in a fatal plane crash, and they built a new plane using some of the surviving parts of the original plane which had crashed. And then there were stories of that plane then being haunted, and I remember people seeing kind of reflections of strangers seated next to them in the seats, you know, reflected in the windows and things like that. I remember it being a bit of a hokey film, but I think it was quite a hokey book as well. But that's the only example I can think of.
There must be all sorts of... because when you think about transport, there's literally a connotation there with going to the afterlife. So there must be so many... there must be loads of stories like that.
Yeah.
Rocket ships.
Yeah,
packed full of ghosts.
Hot air balloons.
Actually, no, I think that might be the film Event Horizon.
Like a roller coaster ghost.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. I want there to be a haunted roller coaster.
Roller coaster.
I mean, that would be an incredible selling point for your ride.
Yeah. Where you're just going along and then suddenly someone appears next to you and you're like, holy...
Or there's like a hitchhiker appears at the side of the roller coaster, like thumb out.
And at the end of the ride, you're dead. Yeah. Just lying in the seat.
Okay, that went really dark there.
We talk about death a lot on this show. Why wouldn't it go dark at times?
Believe it or not, there has been a recent spike in lake monster sightings. I feel like lately I've been talking a lot about monsters and weird animals on this show rather than ghosts, but I quite like that. There's something very lovely about lake monsters, and in the last month there have been a spike in the number of people reporting that they've seen Ogopogo, which is the lake monster which lives in Okanagan Lake, which I'm pretty sure I'm mispronouncing. Now, There's a guy called Bill Stekiewicz who has been documenting what he claims are credible reported sightings of the Ogopogo Lake Monster since 2003, so for 15 years. And he recently made the papers because he's received no less than 3 sightings of Ogopogo in 1 month. Which
honestly, they're like London buses.
So the first of these 3 sightings came from 2 guys who said that they saw a large snake-like creature move across the water on September 12th. And since then, Bill says that he's documented 2 more sightings after that. One of those sightings was reported from the 22nd floor of a downtown high-rise building, and another from a condo balcony in the 4000 block of the same area. Bill says that people are reluctant to report sightings and said he claimed to have commissioned a professional survey of over 1,000 residents that proved that people are scared to come forward. The survey, which was conducted in 1999, asked the question, if you saw something in the water, would you report it? Which, quite frankly, is a very vague question.
Yes, that's very open to interpretation. I hope you went into a bit more detail than that.
No, I genuinely think that was just the question, Charlie. Apparently, according to Bill, 8% said they would report it. And he said, if you look at all the credible sightings over the year, and if that only represents 8%, do the math on that. It's beyond belief. There, Bill goes on to say...
what if there's something in the water is like a fish or a duck or...
It's beyond belief, Charlie.
Because I'm pretty sure I wouldn't report that either.
It's beyond belief.
Whereas if it was like a drowning person in the lake, I probably would report that.
Well, that's good. That's
or
good.
Or an especially big condom floating by. Does he want to see that?
Net that. There haven't been... Bill goes on to say there haven't been... Bill goes on to say there haven't been a lot of Ogopogo sightings. I feel like I'm changing the way I pronounce this monster's name every time I say it. There haven't been a lot of Ogopogo sightings lately, which is the problem. Then all of a sudden you have 3 in 3 weeks. Totally amazing. You could also say beyond belief. Bill believes that a species of large snake-like water creatures inhabit the lake after he listened to dozens of witnesses' accounts over several decades. He says that the theory is that eons ago, the lake was open to the ocean. He speculated that sea creatures swam up and became trapped once the waters receded to their current levels. He himself says that he saw a large snake-like head popping out of the lake about 150 metres from the shore back in 2015. He grabbed his camera and captured an image of a round object on the calm lake that possessed possible facial features. I'm just going to ping you guys this image.
Okay.
I would love to... we're just going to capture your raw reactions to this.
Oh, I like raw reactions. That literally could be anything.
Where are the facial features, guys?
I can see it's like 2 eyes on the side and lips. It kind of looks like a Nickelodeon cartoon from the 90s.
Oh, I see. Like teeth.
Yeah.
On the right hand side. It looks like the alien from Alien when it bursts out of the stomach.
Yeah.
Run, Bill, run.
Or it's a dolphin winky.
Or it's a pebble going into the water. Or it could just be...
No, Charlie. It's beyond belief. The recent cluster of reported Ogopogo sightings is common for the month of September, according to Bill. He says the majority of sightings historically in Okanagan Lake happened between the last week of August and the first week of October. So if anyone wants to get a picture of Ogopogo, they better get a camera and they better get out there on the lake.
Oh, as of 3 hours ago on Fox News, Canada's legendary Ogopogo Lake Monster is caught on video.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I'll send you that link now. Well, unfortunately, it's a video.
This is awesome.
So
we have like a breaking update as we're recording.
I'm pinging it. But obviously you have to watch the video. So I'm watching it now.
Okay. I'm watching it now. Another raw reaction caught live on the Spooktator.
So they're talking about that.
Oh, it's October 5th.
Yeah, so it's up to date.
There has been a new sighting of Canada's version of the Loch Ness Monster. They spelled it L-O-C-K, Loch Ness Monster. On September 12th, David Halbauer and his brother Keith and their families were enjoying a picnic at one of the lake's many beaches when they saw something. When they saw something that left them awestruck. Quote, when you're sitting by the beach on a sunny day, you don't expect to see a dinosaur climbing out of the water.
That is true.
That's quite a point.
Statement. You don't. It's true. The brothers likened the animal to a giant snake moving across the water and said it was about 49 feet long. Since that encounter, there have been two more sightings of Ogopogo.
Wait, are these just the sightings?
Is that it? There was no video footage.
I think it's just a report on the sightings which we were just talking about.
Oh, what a load of crap.
Yeah.
No, but it says Canada's Ogopogo Lake Monster caught on video. It literally says caught on video.
Yeah. I know, but there's no video footage.
The creature has been captured on video. There have been three major sightings of the monster in the park. Did they really report that something's been caught on video in a video and not show the video in the video
still
about the video?
Still pictures captured on video doesn't quite cut it.
Well, I'm sorry. I got all excited then.
Yeah, well, so I thought we were going to be right on the cutting edge of a breaking story then. But
yeah, me too.
Not.
Well, I still think it's beyond belief.
Oh, absolutely.
But interestingly, around the same time, the news has broken in the Scottish Sun that an American woman has uncovered the 9th official sighting of the Loch Ness Monster this year. And she did so while browsing Google Earth. Now, I didn't even know there had been one sighting of the Loch Ness Monster this year, let alone 9. So she made, this woman called Lisa Stout made the startling discovery while she was on Google Earth. And she's basically found this still taken 3 years ago in the Fort Augustus area. And it basically shows this thing protruding out of the water and has been accepted by officials as the 9th sighting of Nessie this year. Now, this blew my mind, not because it shows the Loch Ness Monster, because I don't think it does, but because there's an official register of Loch Ness Monster sightings.
Who are these officials?
You have to go to the website, www.lochnesssightings.com. And they have all the sightings in the 21st century of the Loch Ness Monster listed there. And this one, Lisa Stout's sighting, is the first one you come across. I think they do it in chronological order from the most recent to the first, so to speak. And yeah, so this is the latest, the 9th of 2018 sighting of the Loch Ness Monster. Now, I wanted to see what the other ones were. So I scrolled down. On the 5th of September, two people on vacation from England saw a dark shadow in the water near Dawes Beach at 5:35 p.m. Below that is a photograph of a wave. And I think that that's the monster. And it says, initially they thought it was just a wave, but the shadow remained persistent for about 30 to 35 seconds with water moving around it. When they zoomed in using their camera phone, it became much more apparent that it was a stationary object. What's really interesting here is that they had this sighting on Dawes Beach. And on Dawes Beach, there is a van in which lives a man who has the Guinness World Record for the longest Loch Ness Monster vigil ever. And he's been living in the van on Dawes Beach for decades now.
Oh, that chap, yes.
His name's Steve Alton. He lives in this van. I'm actually really jealous of his lifestyle. I want to live in a van next to Loch Ness.
It looks really quite idyllic.
Yeah, he basically makes little models of the Loch Ness Monster, which he sells from the van. He must sell hundreds of them, because on all of the maps that you get around the Loch Ness area with the tourist places to visit, Dawes Beach is on there to go and visit him in his Loch Ness Monster hunting van. It's really cool.
It also sounds now, a little bit creepy when you put it like that, because...
Well, I've been in the van and it's not creepy, really. He's got a really nice little log burner in there. He's got a piano, an upright piano.
Oh, I'm sure it's fine, but if I walked up to someone in the street and went, would you like to come in my Loch Ness Monster hunting van, I genuinely would expect a slap in the face and a visit from the police.
Yeah, thinking back, I probably should have thought twice about getting into a stranger's van.
Maybe.
On holiday in Scotland.
Did he like offer you some sweets or something beforehand?
Did the van collapse and then all you see around the outside of the van is a cage and you get taken off to the...
He did offer us statues of the Loch Ness Monster, so that's how he lured us in. But there was a cat in there, so all was good.
Yeah.
Now, another sighting of the Loch Ness Monster came on the 17th of August. This is one of the official sightings. The Loch family, who are on holiday from Ontario in Canada, saw a, quote, solid dark shape appear about 50 yards offshore, close to Urquhart Castle at 9:40 a.m. The sighting lasted about 1 minute, and this is what they captured on camera. And basically, on the video, on the picture below, it's just like a little dark thing in the water. And it's just the same. You scroll down, it's just dark things in the water, shadows in the water, waves, choppy water. So, yeah, those are the most recent Loch Ness Monster and Ogopogo Monster sightings.
Good, I can really sleep thrilling. Tonight.
Yeah, but the thing is, I love the fact that these myths persist and that people still go on holiday looking for these lake monsters. I think there's something really endearing about it in a way.
Yeah, I like it too. Okay, I think there's something that's very very sweet about that, how a story like that can still exist in the 21st century. And even when I went to Loch Ness, you know, having absolutely no belief that it was there, you still look out at the water and just think,
yes,
but what if you just saw, you know, a big long neck come out of the water? It just, yeah, it's nice to think that something like that could still exist, even if you know rationally that, no, there's no way.
So do you guys have anything that you would like to share, plug, or recommend?
Well, I have a podcast recommend. This is one that's been going for a little while, but I've only just started listening to it. It's called Goosebuds. And it is a few guys, each episode they read one of the R.L. Stine's Goosebumps books and see the TV adaptation if there was one. And they just discuss what they think about it afterwards. But it's, you know, it's humorous. It's a bit, it actually is quite sweet. And they genuinely seem to enjoy the books as well. So that's my recommend.
I used to be terrified of those books. Oh my gosh. They
what were the other ones he did? The adult ones? You know,
Point Horror was one of them.
Yeah, I think that must be it.
Scream Street or Fear Street?
Scream Street, yeah.
Yeah, that they did. Yeah, he sort of did that writing where he knew that if he started writing for like 11-year-olds, he could then start writing for, you know, 12, 13-year-olds, and he would be able to write a series of books which kind of grow up with you, kind of Harry Potter style.
Yeah.
Which was quite smart of him. And apparently he genuinely wrote them all. A lot of other authors that were very prolific, actually, you know, you sort of farm out the writing to other people and it gets published under your name. But apparently it was all entirely done by him. And I believe it's still ongoing.
Oh, wow. I know they recently made some Hollywood movies, didn't they, with Jack Black.
Yes, yeah, there I was think one out. A sequel coming out fairly soon.
Yeah,
I enjoyed the first Goosebumps movie because it's a lot of fun, and so I was kind of half interested in watching the sequel. And then I saw the trailer, and was like, "Oh, it's the exact same plot but with different kids." I'm not all that bothered then.
Okay. No,
I do need to watch the first one. I think
I haven't seen it, but it does look like it's kind of nicely tongue in cheek, which I enjoy.
If I'd been 10, it might have been my favourite film of all time if I'd seen it at that age.
Paul, do you have anything that you want to plug?
No.
Okay.
Mainly because I haven't thought about it. So let's recommend Sobriety. I highly recommend that.
Excellent. I'd like to recommend that people check out the book called Spooky Archaeology, Myth and the Science of the Past, which is written by Jeb Card, who is also a co-host of the Archaeological Fantasies podcast. I recently got a copy of this book and I'm a couple of chapters in and it's just so fascinating. It's about the way in which actual archaeology as a science kind of intertwines with the kind of the cursed and historic and paranormal aspects of archaeology. So, you know, the way it's portrayed in Hollywood in films like
mummy curses and things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm only a couple of chapters in, but I'm hooked. And it's quite a big book, but I think it's definitely worth it. I think he was interviewed on the Monster Talk podcast, and I'm hoping that once I've read the book, we might be able to invite him onto the Spooktator podcast to have a talk about that, because there are just so many aspects in there about ghosts and the paranormal that I've never really considered, like the fact that museums are said to be haunted, and they tend to be haunted by a whole plethora of different things, because the things in the museum come from all different cultures, and that kind of made me go, I would recommend that.
That's what they based the movies Night at the Museum on, those very facts.
Yeah,
but they weren't haunted, were they?
They were. It was all magic.
They came to life. That's different.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other, if you ask me.
It was based on the cursed tablet, wasn't it? The tablet brought everything to life, and wherever the tablet went, all the things came to life. So that wasn't a ghost.
It's paranormal, though, isn't it?
It's a curse, yes, but it's not.
We're going to have a falling out over this.
It's not a haunting, Paul.
Says you.
So this has been another episode of the Spooktator podcast. You can find links to everything we've discussed at our website, spooktator.co.uk, where you can also find ways of subscribing to the show, leaving reviews, and getting in touch with us, including links to our social media accounts. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Until then, remember, spooky is in the eye of the beholder.